A married couple had a quarrel and ended up giving each other the silent treatment. Have you ever heard of that? They just weren't going to talk to each other, and so they would break down after a while if something was just absolutely essential and write each other a note. And so the husband needed to get up early one morning and catch a flight for business. But he couldn't quite make himself say anything to his wife because they were still in that mode, silent treatment. And so he just wrote her a note and put it where she would find it in the bathroom and said, "I've got to be awake at 5 o'clock in the morning. Please wake me up." Well, come the next morning, he finally woke up about 10. His wife was gone. He had long missed his flight. That flight was already there and back by then. And he was so angry that his wife had let him down at this crucial point until, "You're ahead of me, aren't you?" He found a note. He found a note by his pillow. Said, "It's 5 a.m., you better get up." Well, those silent treatments aren't all they're cracked up to be. We're talking this morning about communication. Families that make it. This is the third installment. There are notes in your bulletin on the flip side of the prayer list if you care to go there. This is the third installment. The number one common characteristic of families that make it: commitment. There is in those families a no matter what kind of steel cord that binds them together. That's the number one characteristic of families that make it. The number two characteristic of families that make it that we discussed week before last: appreciation. Family members see in each other qualities that are outstanding and affirm those family members in those unique qualities. And developing, we emphasized last time, the ability to see, to know those qualities and to affirm them. Really, the expressing of appreciation is the smallest detail. It's seeing the details that are really the crucial things. But the second characteristic, number two characteristic of families that make it: appreciation. And then this morning, I want to talk about the number three characteristic of families that make it, and that's communication. Communication. Now, we're not talking, when I talk about communication, we're not talking about just chattering with each other. We're not talking about much talk. That doesn't make an outstanding family, just a lot of talking going on. In fact, the Bible tells us and warns us that a lot of talk can be a detrimental thing. You know, there's a statement in Proverbs 10:19. Sort of an amusing passage to me for some reason. I don't think it was meant to be amusing, but I just it just sort of strikes me funny. But the more I think about it, the more I think it's right. Proverbs 10:19 says, "When words are many, sin is not absent." When words are many, sin is not absent. And you know, there's something else about a person who talks a lot. Sort of like getting a drink out of a fire hydrant, you know. They're just sort of spewing. Well, sooner or later, you avoid them and you stop listening. So when we are talking about communication, we're not talking about just a lot of talk. That can be detrimental. And not all talk is good talk. The Bible is full of warnings about bad use of the tongue and words. James chapter 3 talks about how the tongue can just cut people down to size and really just destroy anything that has been encouraged before. Oh, the tongue has great potential for damage. And so the Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29 says, "Do not listen or do not allow any unwholesome talk to come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." Well, that's how it ought to be, but that's not how it always is. So when we talk about communication, we're not just talking about a lot of talking, and we're not just talking about talk that is just of all varieties. And we're not just talking about talk, because communication is shared in verbal ways and in nonverbal ways. We've heard about body language. Is there anything to that, you suppose? Body language? Oh, you bet. You bet. I can say, "I love you," and with my body, take it all back. I can say, "I will," and every step of the way think, "I'm not," and show it by my body. There's all kinds of communication. Now get this, this is in your notes, because this is a formal definition of what I'm talking about when I'm talking about communication. Look in your notes. Communication is the process through which a sense of belonging or being connected occurs. Verbal or nonverbal, it doesn't matter. It's the process through which a sense of belonging or being connected occurs. Do you see the word commune in the word communication? What does commune mean? We're going to have communion after this lesson. What do we mean by communion? Well, communion means a deep sharing. A sharing together of thoughts and feelings. Communion is a sacred time when we commune with the Lord, but communion is a sacred time when we are in communication with those we love, those of our family, our physical family or our spiritual family. It's a terrible feeling to feel you are alone. There may not be much worse in this old world than to feel you are alone. Now, I don't know which is worse, the truly being alone by yourself or being with people and still feeling alone. It's possible, you know. We talk about families. That's what this series is about, families. How sad it is if a husband or a wife feel alone in a marriage. But it happens. Living under the same roof, a husband and wife can go about their isolated lives in two corners of the house, maybe even sleep in the same bed, and there be no real communing going on. And one or both of those people feel desperately alone, even though they are together in a way. God said, "It is not good that man be alone." And He wasn't talking about males. He was talking about mankind, humankind. It is not good for a human being to be alone. That's one of the great overriding principles that God expresses in His describing how His creation and creatures ought to live. It is not good to be alone. We have an example of someone who felt alone. And that is Elijah in 1 Kings 18 and 19. And Elijah was not literally alone because he had been involved with one of the maybe mountaintop experiences of his life just prior to the passage I'm going to be reading here in just a moment. He had been with a lot of people. He had impacted a lot of people. But the mixture of terror and despair that comes with being alone is so well depicted in this particular story. And though it's not a passage that deals with the family, it deals with my subject of communication that I want you to see. Turn to 1 Kings chapter 19. And I'm just going to sort of go to the bottom line on this. I don't have time to go into the story. But he felt all alone, Elijah, that considered the greatest prophets of the Jews, Elijah. And we see him saying there in verse 14, "I am the only one left." He felt all alone. My point is, it's a terrible feeling to feel that way. And the Lord had to reassure Elijah. And he does so, beginning in verse 15. He does it in three ways. The Lord says, "Elijah, you get up and you go to the desert of Damascus. And when you get there, here's what I want you to do and here's who I want you to see." And the Lord even names names. He is specific. He's not general. And then in verse 18, he reminds Elijah that though he feels alone, there are 7,000 in Israel whose knees have not bowed down to Baal. Now here's the three points I want you to get from this. And this is so vital for the purpose of communication. God assures, number one, Elijah, that he matters. He has a purpose. And he wanted to reassure Elijah about that purpose. And then he gives Elijah a list of people by name with whom he is to connect. He has a job to do and it involves other people. And so you get up and you go connect with these people. And then, finally, thirdly, he reminds Elijah that 7,000 in Israel have not bowed down before Baal. You are not alone, Elijah. You are a part of a much bigger whole. Now those three things, those three P's you might say that God tells Elijah are the same three P's that every member of your family needs to have communicated, and he needs or she needs to have it communicated often. Every day, well maybe. Maybe every day, in some way or another, they need to be reminded, each one of them, mom, dad, the kids, husband, wife, they need to be reminded that there is a purpose for them. They matter. They matter being in this home. This home would not be the same without them. They are important. They have a purpose. That's communication. The second thing, they need to be connected with people. They need to have people in their lives. The people of the family, oh certainly, but other people as well. You just need to be connected with people. One of the great factors involving the church. One of the great healthy features of the church is the connection to people that you get only in the church. It's not to be found anywhere else. It's not to be found in any civic club, any organization. The same level of feelings that exist in the church cannot be found anywhere else. And so God has provided us the church because we need the connection with people. And then, every family member needs to know that they are a part of a bigger whole. Part of a bigger whole. We are living in a time, and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, of isolation. Isolation is a mark of our time. People can live in large population centers. They can live in the Metroplex, Dallas, Fort Worth. Live in a big apartment complex. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of people just right around them in their little area. And yet they are desperately alone. They have no one. There'll be one of a car driving Central Freeway, and they're going somewhere and they're going someplace fast. But don't let the appearance deceive you. They don't know anyone else. They may not even know anyone else where they are going. And when they return, they go to their little apartment. And there they dwell in isolation. Isolation is a mark of our time. It's true in churches. People come to an assembly like this and sit on a bench for a few minutes and then they leave. Not knowing anybody else's name. Not knowing anybody else's problems. They live in isolation. It's a sad thing. One of the saddest things I can think of, really, to come to worship and leave without any connection with people. Oh, maybe a, how are you doing? But that's about it. They don't hear their name called because people don't know their name. They live in isolation. I can drive down the street on my way home and I'm behind an SUV. And I see in that SUV driving down a neighborhood street in the back seat a video playing on a DVD player in the back of that SUV. Even in families, we've allowed technology to thrust us into tragic isolation. That kid demands a DVD and the parents are happy to give it to him just to keep him quiet. There is no exchange, there is no interchange, there is no communication. Going from their home to the soccer field or wherever it is just a few blocks away. Oh, the parents thought, well, we're going to get this for our trips to Colorado. That way the kids won't have to look at those terrible mountains or look at the scenery. And we won't have to play those silly license plate games. They'll have something to do all the way to Colorado. And of course, that's indeed what happens. But now it has become, those have to be on from the house to the grocery store or the soccer field. Families, even families, living in isolation. But families that make it aren't that way. Families that make it have communication. Dr. Lynn McMillan has been professor at Oklahoma Christian for years. He was a professor there when I was a student there. Now, admittedly, he had just gotten there, but we did overlap. He's still there. He's a marriage and family therapist, among other things, at Oklahoma Christian. And he says that we can learn to communicate. We can learn how to develop in our families, and that's what we're primarily talking about, but it's also true in churches or any other group. We can learn how to communicate. And he says five things are vital to communication in marriages and families. This is in your notes, but complete the blank so you'll get the full idea. We can learn. It may not be going on now. Chances are it's not. But we can learn. Number one, he says communication begins with listening. Communication begins with listening, careful and sensitive listening. I wish I had time to dwell on each one of these points, but I don't this morning, so I'll just go through the rules very quickly. Number two, communication includes sending messages that are consistent. And this is very important for parents. Do not mix and confuse the messages. Don't say one thing and do another. Or don't say one thing with your mouth and with your body language, send another message. Be consistent. Number three, good communication includes sharing one's true feelings. In other words, he's saying it's important that you get into your heart and be able to communicate from your heart. Don't just isolate communication to the head. It's important heart to heart. Number four, good communication is learning to disagree without destructive arguments. There are going to be disagreements, but those disagreements don't have to be Armageddon. And then number five, communication involves seeing different points of view. Different points of view, seeing different points of view. You know, I looked at that list and I thought, no wonder we live lonely, isolated lives in our homes and in our churches and even among churches. We violate the most basic principles of communication, don't we? You just look at that list. But my point is, families that make it don't violate those principles. Now I want to caution you here, no one is perfect in any aspect of family life. There is no perfection to be found. We are imperfect, we live in an imperfect world. And so don't let anybody tell you there are certain words to say, that there's a certain way to go about this business, that you have to do this or that you have to do that, or you're not doing it right. There are all kinds of authorities like that who try to tell us how to go about things that are important. But that's not true. There are many ways to accomplish those five principles. There are no one form of communication, as I stressed a while ago. There is verbal and nonverbal ways to communicate. But however it's done, somehow, some way, every family member needs to know that they have purpose, that they are a part of a bigger whole, that they are important, that they matter. They matter. When I think about communication, I think about how God communicates with us. As I think about the Scripture, beginning in Genesis all the way through, I just think about how God has said things, how He has written things, how He has demonstrated things. You know, much of what God has done is nonverbal. So much of God's communicating to us never made it to the page. It's nonverbal. We can look at the creation and know who God is and what He's like. God communicates to us. And if somehow we could learn the importance of communication, and then in our own way that is most suited to our personality and our ways of doing things, communicate with those we love the most on the face of the earth. The number three common characteristic of families that make it: communication. Now let's all stand this morning as we respond to the lesson this morning. Our emphasis again is on families. And so as we meditate on this song, let's think about our resolve to be a communicator in our families. If you need to respond in a public way, that is very suitable and encouraged. Elders will be near you this morning. If you just need prayer, just one-on-one with them, I ask you this morning, dare step out of that aisle and take a hand and connect with someone so that both of you can go to God and get some healing in your life. Let's listen to the words of this song.